Hey, everybody. Welcome to The Ed Show.
Number 45.
How do you know it's 45?
Because I was on the last one, 44.
Well, there you go. I'm Joey. He's Rick. Hey. We're doing the news.
Yes.
There's not a lot of news.
No, but there's a very important piece of news I wanted to share with you guys. Was the fact that, you know what? Registration for this conference that's called MMS is opening very soon.
Very soon.
And I like MMS because it was my coming out party here at Corp. It was my first event that I got to go to as a Corp evangelist.
Where we basically threw you in and said, swim.
Swim, here you go. And there's also a video posted about the first day of, you know, losing Rick and breaking Rick before the conference started.
Yeah,
The CSI absolutely. Episode of Rick is out
absolutely.
There, too.
MMS 2013, Las Vegas, Nevada.
Yes.
April 8th. Through the 12th, so stay tuned for those registration details.
Where's it at?
Las Vegas.
No, do we have do we know where
coming
it's at
soon.
Inside of it? Don't
coming
know yet?
Soon. Coming soon.
Well, okay.
Las Vegas, Nevada.
Good.
It's kind of a small place.
It is. It's the Strip. It works.
It's the Strip.
It works.
I understand you have some news around a book.
Yes. My good friend Mitch Tuluk from The Peg, Winter Peg, up in Kazakhstan. He's
so let me translate. That would be Winnipeg.
Yes,
in Canada.
You got it. He's an awesome author. He has I think actually written as many books on Microsoft Windows type subjects, mm-hmm. as tall as a human being. I saw a picture of him on Facebook once. It's huge. Anyway, he's gone ahead and edited a book and written a book about installing and configuring Windows Server 2012. It was just announced and released today.
Awesome.
So you can get more information about that at aka.ms/INCWS2012 for install and config. See how I did that?
Okay. Yeah, that's awesome. And is spelled out.
It's you got it. And you can't do the ampersand.
That breaks things.
Yeah. So I didn't want Rick to be the guy that broke stuff. So INCWS2012. It'll be in the notes down below.
Awesome. Awesome. One other piece of news, the Bing Translator. You ever use the Bing Translator?
All the time.
So the Bing Translator is now available for Windows 8 phones, which I know you've got one. I've got one here, right? Awesome. Yeah. Colorful today, too.
Yes.
So the Translator is actually really cool. It's got two different pieces. It has augmented reality, which is great because you can walk up to a sign, use the translator if it's in a language that you don't understand, hold it up, and it'll actually translate some of the pieces, like on signs, menus, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Not quite sure if it does Kazakhstan yet.
Well, you'll have to test that.
It probably just depends an A to everything.
You know, it says stop at it, and it has to kind of figure out which one it's trying to translate from and to. So.
Yeah. School zone, eh?
Yeah. That's A to everything else.
That's it.
Very,
A to everything.
Very cool, man.
Also has a voice mode, so and it's really kind of driven around more conversational stuff. So if you know,
so I could hold it up to you right now and it translate Texan to North American English.
Hey now,
and you'd hold it up to me and it would do Kazakhstan to North American English.
Exactly. I don't think it has those languages, but if we were using real languages, probably would. And then also has an offline mode. So for those that may be traveling in an area where you don't have the data and those kinds of things, it's got some translator packs, offline mode. There's a link to a really cool kind of behind the scenes video that the Bing team has got that I'll go ahead and add to our links down below here in
that's
this post.
Cool, man. I like that. I like that a lot.
But apart from that, man, that's like there's...
It's a light news week.
It's a light news week, so I think with that, I'm just probably going to...
No, you know what? I want to put you on the spot, dude. I want to put you on the spot. I want you to show me something.
You want me to show you something?
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to give you, a couple of minutes.
Okay.
Show me something cool.
With anything in particular, or I mean,
you're the Windows client guy.
Okay,
I'm the Windows server guy. So why don't you,
you want to see something about
take
Windows
a couple of minutes? Okay. You've been around. You've been talking about Windows 8 for different people and stuff like that. Why don't you just show me something cool about Windows 8? That's not not anything specific. Just show me something cool.
Nothing like being put on the spot here. I'm gonna do a couple things. First off, the other day we've got a ton of, obviously at Microsoft, a ton of email and groups and stuff going on. Somebody actually asked me a question, actually published to the group saying, hey, how is it that I can get Internet Explorer to always launch into the desktop mode instead of...
You mean from links using, and stuff like that?
Yeah, exactly. So if you're clicking in a link in email or those kinds of things, always make sure that they launch in the desktop mode versus the Windows 8, the application that we see here. So I'm going to show you how to do that really quick.
Okay.
In the browser, I don't know what all I've got running here, so let's just close all this and We'll reopen the browser. If you go to the browser, we can go into the settings. If you click the right button and go into internet options, go into programs, the programs tab, and then you see this top piece here. It says, choose how you open links. So in this case, I'm letting Internet Explorer decide. I can drop down and say, always open Internet Explorer on the desktop.
Huh.
So if you've got links that have certain plugins or some of those things.
That aren't there for the modern UI interface yet?
Correct. Yep, inside the Windows 8 desktop app.
Okay.
So you can choose to do this.
That's cool. I'll give you a point for that.
And I got a lot of great feedback when I replied, going, "Oh yeah, you just do it here," and everybody's like, "Wow!"
That'll be even cooler is if we could find out if that's controllable through group policy or something.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's going to be a task that we're going to have to. You know what? I'm going to set the challenge for you now.
Okay.
That's something that you
I'll have
to
see if
go
I can have the
out.
Answer in time for the notes in the bottom of the comments.
Exactly.
That's pretty.
You know, the other thing is when I go out and I've done a couple of Windows 8 events. Talking about Windows 8, and it's a very, very simple story that a lot of people may not quite be using this feature or understand this feature, and it's grouping things on your start screen.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, the start screen is very much me, right? This is kind of my smart screen. You
know,
see
I can
all
see
sorts
your
of
updates
crazy
are
pictures.
Going on there.
Yeah,
you get
all my
like
live tiles and logos and stuff. A lot of folks at home may or may not know I'm also a DJ. So I've got DJ software here. This is my day-to-day laptop.
Yeah.
One thing you'll notice is that my icons are kind of all smattered around. I've got one group called Office.
It looks nothing like my desktop. I just take the defaults and whatever happens.
Yeah, exactly. So we can actually organize this pretty simply, pretty easily. So if I wanted to say, you know, kind of group all my DJ tools because they're kind of all lumped everywhere, I can grab a hold of the icon for one of my apps, and I can move it till you see this little gray bar that's right there.
Okay,
that's
going to
create a new group, right?
Huh.
So let's grab a couple of other things that I use for DJing. Like I've got to tag all my music files, right? That's pretty important, and I'm going to add that to that group. Pretty simple, right?
Yeah.
We can organize them. There's another one here, so let's just move that there, and yeah, two. I think of three is good enough. Now, what I can also do is I can actually name this group.
Okay.
Right? So what I do, if you notice here in the lower left-hand side, now I'm using keyboard and mouse.
But
this
so
can
you,
all be done via
this is,
touch,
this isn't
right?
a touch interface machine you're using this on. This is
standard keyboard and mouse, but can be done on both.
Yep.
The strategy is the same. If I was using a touchscreen, I would do the pinch zoom piece. But now there's in the lower right-hand side, there's a minus sign. You'll see that's now dropped out. I'm going to right-click my group here. And you'll see the option here to name my group. So let's call it DJ Tools. And there it is.
Oh,
and then
sweet.
I can move that right around so that next time I go back to my, I could have just zoomed right back in, but you'll see. It's right there. DJ Tools right there.
That works. That is cool.
So organizing the start screen, you know, making it personal, but you can still, I'm generally like you. I just kind of go with the defaults and everything's just kind of there and I find it. But I've found that recently, just kind of organizing things a little bit. Make it my New Year's resolution to actually be organized.
For me, on the start screen, I'm always just the guy that types because I'm a keyboarder guy.
Sure.
So I just the Windows key, type in OUT for Outlook, enter, boom. Go and say CMD, enter, boom. And it's just, for me, it's very fast. So
right.
Now that I know about these groups,
there you go.
I'm going to be making groups.
So did I win? Did you I show
me
something cool?
You showed me two things cool. So
awesome.
Kudos to you. That's 2 points.
Awesome.
Good stuff. So what do you got lined up for a segment after this?
We are going to talk about Active Directory networking.
Oh.
So I've got an interview coming up, actually, right now. Hey, welcome back. I got rid of Rick and brought in Ganesh. Hey, man, how are you?
Good to see you.
Good to see you as well. So I've known Ganesh for quite a while. Ganesh, not everybody has seen you and known you.
Yes.
Why don't you tell everybody who you are, what you do?
Hey, guys, I'm a program manager in the Windows Azure networking team, and I've been working on virtual networks ever since, you know, we started planning it, designing it from the ground up. So that plus anything cool and new that's coming up in Windows Azure networking.
What did you do before you did Windows Azure networking?
So I was working in the Windows networking team, so.
So networking is something that you might know a little bit about,
yes,
then, right?
Yes, I can certainly say that.
All right, so for everybody at home who might not be familiar, mm-hmm. let's talk a little bit about, mm-hmm. first, Windows Azure networking mm-hmm. in general, right? Mm-hmm. Now, before, it was kind of you throw something up there and it runs in the cloud mm-hmm. and doesn't really have connectivity back. And obviously when we start looking across solutions, particularly from an IT guy perspective, we really want to leverage more of a hybrid scenario, right? Where I can have the big thing, right? Compliance, security, those things, or maybe I'm just not comfortable in having data or other things up in the cloud. I want to connect so that my data is on my premises and maybe some of my other resources are running up in the cloud. How do we go about doing that with Windows Azure?
So historically, you know, we never got to support the IT administrator, and that's a big change for us. So we've started including the IT administrator in everything ever since we launched infrastructure as a service. So that's a big change. But before I wanted to talk about that, half the things we do really don't get to be shown as features outside. We really build the infrastructure and the plumbing under the covers, and we've done quite a bit of work over the last year to essentially redesign our data centers. All the data centers where you're hosting virtual machines right now are really brand new and built up from scratch. They're all 10 gigabit Ethernet based. They scale really well and are extremely performant.
So you had to actually go back and redesign
how those data centers are. Exactly.
Wow.
So that's what was the platform for us to build on. And the virtual networks feature that we've built on essentially enables you to link your premises to the cloud using a site-to-site VPN solution. That was a cool piece of feature that we built, and that really depended on all the new stuff that we actually put into the data center. One had to depend on the other.
So gone are the days of me having to run an agent onto on one separate system and up in the cloud as well.
See, we realized that for an enterprise admin or anyone who's interested in IT, they really don't want to run an agent in every virtual machine, that they really want to connect to the cloud. So we wanted to make them treat Azure as just another branch office. It had to look and feel just like another branch office. So we decided to use VPN as a solution to link the network you create in Azure to the corporate network. So it just looks and feels like a branch office.
And this is a pretty common scenario, even for branch offices, right? We treat those, a lot of cases, I dealt with a ton of branch offices in a previous life, and that it was exactly that. It was essentially a site-to-site.
You bring your own IP address into the cloud. You essentially use it to assign IP addresses to VMs. And, you know, from a trust perspective, they are part of the same enterprise network. So you really don't have to do anything special to secure your virtual network deployments to what you already have. And the cool thing is, since it's essentially an extension, all the tools and management software that you use in your premises directly fit into, you know, can be directly used to manage anything that you've deployed in Azure.
So first, let me ask you, how do we connect? I mean, are there specific devices? Can we use software-based VPNs? What does it take to connect?
So when you actually log into the Windows Azure portal, we actually have a wizard in the portal that allows you to create a virtual network first. You create a virtual network, you specify the IP address range that you want to bring into Azure, and then once you do that, you can set up a soft VPN gateway in Azure. Now, we do the deployment and management of the gateway under the covers.
Okay.
And in addition to that, we worked with a few industry standard VPN device vendors to standardize and test certain VPN devices. So we've worked with Cisco and Juniper, for instance, and we've got three or four models from each of these vendors to actually be validated with our solution. So if you were to use one of these devices, we will actually give you a sample script that you can download and customize. And that will easily allow you to configure the VPN device to connect to Azure. And, you know, it works like magic. The moment you run that script, you see the portal turn green and you'd be able to see the connectivity.
Everything's all connected and wired up.
Yep.
Now, do I have to go through and bust open a ton of ports and do those things? Because I know the networking guys, and some of them are close friends of mine, so shout out to my networking guys out there, but they get super nervous when we start opening up things.
Yep. So the VPN device is an edge device, so we expect it to be right at the edge of the network from a customer's perspective. It cannot be behind a NAT or a firewall or a proxy in the enterprise network. So it has to be the edge device. It works on industry standard IPsec, so we expect certain protocols and ports to be open. For example, we expect UDP port 500 and UDP port 4500 to be open today, so you can actually set up the IPsec tunnel between the premises and the cloud and have traffic flow freely through the tunnel.
Okay, and it's secured from that point end to end.
Yes.
What about security on our side, right?
So,
because Windows Azure is a multi-tenant environment.
Is a multi-tenant environment, and we've done a lot of work under the covers to essentially secure various tenants from others. And the cool thing with virtual networks is the fact that we actually create a virtual network on top of the Azure network. So each customer has a virtual network. So the network that you have in Azure looks and feels as though it's dedicated for you. So that adds an extra level of isolation between other customers. So even though you're running in virtual machines and there are bound to be other virtual machines in the same physical server, they're completely unaware of your presence, or for that matter, if they're your competitor and use the same IP addresses in Azure, they will still not be able to see you or any parts of your network.
Okay.
So we've done all the work under the covers to ensure the isolation.
So we don't have to deal with any of that stuff.
No.
So we go in, we get a Juniper or a Cisco device, we get it all wired up and connected. You mentioned, and we've got tutorials about this, not only in the platform training kit, which I talked about earlier in the news, but also out on the main Windows Azure site.
So if you go to Windows Azure, under that there's a Manage / Networking tab. We have about 4 or 5 tutorials to get you started on how to create a virtual network, how to configure cross-premises connectivity, how to deploy a domain controller and actually create an AD replica in the cloud. And that's just a starting point. There are a whole new set of cool features that we enable with this. All these can be done either using the portal or using APIs that we have in our, you know, the SDK that we ship with Windows Azure. So you can download that. There's also REST API references that we publish in MSDN, and you can take a look at that as well.
Also PowerShell.
PowerShell,
yes. PowerShell
has been
great. PowerShell, right? Yeah.
It makes your life extremely easy to automate everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So we get it all configured. We're all comfortable. We've got maybe a domain controller running up there. Yeah. Maybe we've got some SharePoint resources and everything else like that. Now, I was perusing through the forums just before because I knew I'd have you here. And I was going to write down some specific questions and, you know, just throw them to you and see if you could answer them here on the fly. Figured I'd be a little bit nicer. I noticed there's a lot of common maybe misconceptions or misconfigurations. What are some of the things that people at home should kind of be aware of prior to going into this so that they don't run into these same issues?
So from a networking perspective, the first thing I'd say is plan your deployments, plan your network first. Make sure that you have a large enough IP address pool that you've allocated for networks in Azure. Make sure you carve them into smaller subnets and place your VMs in subnets. So once you deploy a virtual machine into a virtual network, it's a little hard to change these days. We're trying to make that experience a lot more simpler. But make sure you know what address range you want to use, because adding another address block today is a non-trivial challenge for you. So make sure you plan your network out. Add virtual machines to the right subnet. Make sure you add a virtual machine to a subnet within the virtual network. This gives you much more predictable IP addresses, and also it's easier to manage if you have to define policies or ACLs on virtual machines. So that's one thing that I've seen people struggle with, essentially defining a network and then changing it. The other thing you have to do is essentially make sure you stick to our recommended set of VPN devices, at least when you're trying out. Mm-hmm. And that makes life extremely simple. We've worked with these vendors, made the experience as simple as possible, and we validated these scripts. We know that they work. Any other device that you see out there should technically work, but we really haven't gone through the process of QAing them. So that's a challenge that, you know, I see a lot of people asking me, can I try out this device or that device or a software VPN device? Though they should all work technically, we don't have the expertise to, you know, or the, you know, bandwidth to test all these devices today. So I'd ask you to stick to the devices that.
But if somebody wanted to kind of try, I mean, obviously your recommendation is for that to do that. Do you have a list of the protocols and the ports and things that need
Absolutely.
To be
All
done?
Of that is documented in our MSDN pages. And in fact, for each VPN device, we actually give out explicit instructions on what needs to be done to configure them. Certain devices have challenges configuring NATs. Certain devices configure ACLs in a specific way. Each device has its own way of configuring certain parameters, and all that is, you know, documented in detail in our MSDN pages.
So you mentioned setting up your virtual networks, and one of the interesting things, I've noticed it through the tutorials, also through the labs that we've worked on, there's basically three types of networks that you suggest people create. You've got a front end and a back end, and then like an AD subnet, right, where your domain controllers go and live. How much of that was based on your experiences in getting it running even within Microsoft?
So, you know, right from when we got our basic bits going, we had our own IT team and a bunch of internal teams like our SQL team try it out. You know, it was barely working when we started having these teams work. And, you know, all the guidance we put out there was from all the learnings we've had with working with MSIT. So, for example, when we had to host a domain controller, we had to know that the DC/DNS server has to be in place first before we deploy our tenants. And we had to get an IP address for that. And that's why we came up with the requirement for having an AD subnet where you deploy an Active Directory. So in terms of, you know, we require you to have another gateway subnet. That's required because we wanted to make routing as simple as possible. So we wanted to have a subnet from your own address space so that we don't mess things up for you.
Yeah, absolutely. another common question, I've actually seen this quite a bit, mm-hmm. deals with when we go and we deploy resources into multiple cloud mm-hmm. services, mm-hmm. right? Or maybe even separate regions, mm-hmm. because I know one of the things that we talk about is make sure everything's mm-hmm. in the same mm-hmm. region storage-wise mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. VM-wise. If I deploy something, say, out to a service running in the U.S., mm-hmm. and I deploy something else out, mm-hmm. say, running in, mm-hmm. pick one of the other mm-hmm. regions, can I configure it so that I just have to create a VPN connection to one and have all of that traffic be moving around?
So, unfortunately, with the solution that we put out in preview today, you will have to be doing that only if you create virtual networks in different regions and linking the virtual networks through your premises.
Okay.
You'll have to use the spoke and hub model where mm-hmm. your premises is your hub and everything is routed through your premises. So if you have a deployment in Asia and another deployment in Europe, you will be routing between them through your premises. That absolutely works. That said, down the road, we will make the experience simple for you to route between virtual networks directly.
Is the same hold true when you're doing multiple services within the same
location? So the cool thing about virtual networks, since you brought it up, is the fact that traditionally in Azure, the trust domain or the trust boundary was limited to a single cloud service.
Right.
Now we've expanded that to an entire network. So you can actually build applications that have IaaS and PaaS instances mixed and matched. So you could technically build an application that has web or worker roles acting as a stateless front end and a common SQL Server database acting as your back end. You can use a common suite of management tools or anything that spans multiple cloud services. You know, you could have shared resource tiers that are deployed in a virtual network, and they will be accessible by every other cloud service within the virtual network through the private IP address. You don't have to go through the public internet to connect to them.
Okay, see, now that
simplifies
awesome.
Life for a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
And it mitigates a lot of risk security concerns that a lot of people have.
Yeah, absolutely. What are there any other kind of common mistakes that people make when they go through configuration? Or
one thing that people really struggle with, you know, is name resolution.
Yeah,
so
DNS,
in
right.
Azure, we've enabled you to bring your own DNS servers into Azure. Mm-hmm. So you could either use your DNS server that you have in your premises, or you could set up a DNS server in Azure for name resolution. That way, if you have various instances or various cloud services wanting to talk to one another, all you have to do is configure their names and IP addresses in the DNS server. And the IP address that we assign for a VM stays with the virtual machine for its entire lifetime. Till you delete the VM, the IP address stays with the VM. So that actually simplifies a lot of management for you. And that's something that we did not support in Azure in the past. So I see a lot of people struggling with, what do I do for name resolution if I have to do this?
Mm-hmm.
Another common thing that people ask me is, what do I do with my firewall? Or what do I do if I have to do inter-tenant communication?
Mm-hmm.
If you're creating virtual machines, you really don't have to do anything at the infrastructure level. We've opened them up. But you've got to configure your guest firewall. A lot of people, first time when they deploy a virtual machine, they try to ping another virtual machine. And that's because the guest firewall is in the default setting. We've not messed with it. So you will have to go and open up your ICMP port to be able to ping it.
Right. Just like we would normally have to do, right?
Yes.
Anytime you install Windows Server, the
firewall
is on.
This is exactly the same way that you have in standard Windows that you deploy in your premises.
Okay. Awesome. So, one other thing that I wanted to talk about mm-hmm. a little bit, actually two, I want to talk a little bit about endpoints.
Yes.
And then I want to talk about things you call probes.
Yes.
Right? So you can see where I'm going with this, because
yes.
we start looking at Azure and we're like, hey, we want to scale, right?
Mm-hmm.
We want to mm-hmm. make these services mm-hmm. highly available mm-hmm. as best as we mm-hmm. can. And in order to do that, we start bringing in a couple new topics
yes.
with endpoints and probes.
So historically, you know, as you know, Azure is a multi-tenant environment. And the default policy for us is to close the firewall in the infrastructure layer so that no one can talk to your virtual machines. We give you the ability to essentially open up a port or a port range for communication, either to and from the public internet or between virtual machines that you have running in Azure. So we support different kinds of endpoints in Azure, and an endpoint is essentially a port or a port range that you essentially define, that you ask us to open up in the infrastructure layer. So we have an input endpoint, which is essentially a load balanced endpoint. It maps to the public IP address we assign to the service. Let's say you're running a web service.
Mm-hmm.
You actually create an input endpoint, open up TCP port 80,
mm-hmm.
and that we will configure the firewall and the infrastructure to open up port 80. If you had multiple instances that constitute a particular role, if it's PaaS, we will open up port 80 on every one of these instances and load balance traffic across them.
Okay.
Only port 80 is open to the internet, is open to receive traffic from the internet.
Right.
Now, there's another part of the communication where you want VMs within a single service to communicate with one another. And we have a special type of endpoint called the internal endpoint.
Okay.
You could open up a specific port or a port range to enable communication between virtual machines. So that's when you do an internal endpoint for PaaS.
Okay.
In the case of virtual machines, we've actually defined an internal endpoint under the covers and opened up the entire IP port space, IP both protocol and port space for you. So you could pretty much do any IP-based communication between virtual machines that are part of a single deployment, or if you're in a virtual network, between any instances within a virtual network. All you have to do is open up the guest firewall to essentially have communication between them.
Okay, but if you have other services that are trying to access, you're going to want to make sure that those...
If they are within the same virtual network, they can talk to each other directly.
You're good, but if it's
if not, they will come through the input endpoint that you define.
All right.
There's another kind of endpoint that we've also had supported recently, which is the instance input endpoint. This allows you to connect to every instance behind the load balancer. It's a PaaS-specific concept that we support.
Okay.
And that opens up cool stuff where you can actually monitor and diagnose every instance behind the load balancer through the internet.
So how does that kind of differ from what I've heard referred to as probes?
So the probe is something we have under the covers. The load balancer that we run as a service in Azure essentially probes every virtual machine to see if it's healthy or not.
Right.
And if it is healthy, we send traffic to it. If not, we kind of consider it's dead and take it out of load rotation from our load balancer. Now, there are certain applications that, you know, when we go to virtual machines, there are certain applications that have to say that it's healthy. So for that, we've enabled this concept of custom probes. You specify the protocol and port in which we have to probe you, how often we have to probe you, and when to time you out. And based on that, we will take the virtual machine in and out of rotation.
Okay.
So the probe enables you to specify how to check whether you're healthy or not and whether to keep you in or out of rotation. We support it for TCP and HTTP-based protocols today.
Okay. So that makes sense because if I have, maybe I have a service that might, we know has some latency in there that might be different from what you're normally looking at and those kinds of things.
So in the case, if you're building an application that's meant to be highly available, if you have multiple instances, but you want to only have one of them respond to any of the requests at any given point in time, you could use probes to essentially have a leader election logic built in. One of them can elect itself as the leader and respond to the probes while others don't respond. So there are a lot of cool things that you can do. In fact, a bunch of gaming companies used probes to build a gaming platform. They would direct you to the appropriate gaming room, would select the master using probes. So they built cool systems using this.
That's awesome. Now, you guys are currently in preview now, as with the rest of the infrastructure as a service features. Does that mean you're done? You just kind of sitting around drinking
coffee? Not really.
So this
is just a start for us. This is just a start for us. And if you think this is just the start, think of what's coming down the road. We have a lot of cool features specifically targeted towards the enterprise customers to make sure their lives are easy. You know, they can build applications that are really compliant, meet the regulatory body requirements, and make sure we are at feature parity with most of our competition. So that's where we are headed, and you'll see new features light up pretty soon that essentially make your life a lot easier.
Awesome, awesome. Well, I brought Ganesh in here specifically to talk about these IT infrastructure challenges. These are some of the same things that I myself have run into as I've been setting up this and just waiting on the magic port to be
opened. We've got a lot of great feedback from you, so that's the product.
So Ganesh is here. If you've got questions regarding this, of course, you can always ask them in the comments here, and we'll definitely get the answer. Also, you can check out the MSDN forums, the MSDN support forums. I've seen your name out there on some of those answers out there, so I don't think you sleep. So he's out there doing
that. Keep up.
Also, make sure you check out the tutorials. We've got tutorials on WindowsAzure.com as well as inside of the platform training kit. So you want to take this for a test drive. You can also sign up for a evaluation subscription for Windows Azure, which includes the
90 days
virtual
of trials with virtual machines.
And you can go in and get it tested and start looking at running this true hybrid environment.
Exciting times.
It is, absolutely. Ganesh, thanks for joining
us
today.
Thank you.
All right.
Not bad, man.
Not bad.
Did not know that was possible.
Well.
Very cool. It's a good thing you got a chance to talk to Ganesh.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I've taught you a few things
yes,
today.
Yes. You've schooled me three times. But hey, if you want to get a hold of us, if you want to give us comments in the show, hey, if you like that little segment we just did, show me something cool, let us know in the comments. Send us an email, edge@microsoft.com, or use the Twitter.
You can always use the Twitter, @TNEdge.
Yep, or #TNEdge. We follow that one there as well.
I didn't know this was going to be a new segment there.
Well, maybe it'll
we'll get the feedback from the folks at home and see what they want to do.
Who knows?
That's it for Ed's Show, episode number 45. We'll see you next week. I don't know if you...
Is it me? Is it you? I don't know. We'll figure it out. We'll look at the schedule.
Bye, everybody.
Ciao.